jerks.
These children are going to the most glamorous of all summer camps, Camp Mohawk. There's a 2-year waiting list, and every child has to be voted in. On top of all that, it costs $1,000 a week to go to Camp Mohawk. The question is it worth $1,000 a week?
It sure is. It's the best darn camp there is.
Well, are you connected with Camp Mohawk?
Well, I think so. I'm the program director, Jerry Aldini.
Well, how do you justify $1,000 a week?
Well, we have some special programs. We're doing Shakespeare in the Round again this year, of course. Our political roundtable, Henry Kissinger will appear. Yasser Arafat is going to come out, spend a weekend with the kids, just rap with them.
That's amazing.
And the kids wanted animals, so this year each camper will stalk and kill his own bear in our private wildlife preserve.
Are you sure the children can hack that?
We'll see. But the real excitement, of course, is going to come at the end of the summer, during Sexual Awareness Week. We import 200 hookers from around the world, and each camper, armed with only a thermos of coffee and $2,000 cash, tries to visit as many countries as he can. And the winner, of course, is named King of Sexual Awareness Week and is allowed to rape and pillage the neighboring towns until camp ends.
That's incredible.
What do you expect for $1,000 a week? Hey, you have a good summer, too.
Are you ready for the summer?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim, and now here he is, the man extraordinaire, Teal.
How's it going, Jim?
Happy summer, my friend.
It's here. The summer movie season, which started in January, is now in full swing.
I was going to be a little bit more kind, and I was going to say the movie season that Hollywood has deemed starts in April.
Right.
Which is the weird, it's like it actually starts before the official start of spring.
Yes. Yes. But it kind of burns itself out earlier, too. By the time you get to August, it's just like, oh, man, we're done with this.
But by the time you get to August, try right now. That's like they're having a problem where movies like Men in Black International, they're not doing well. And I was saying this to my wife the other day. It's because people feel like the movie season's over. It's all out of whack. It doesn't have the traditional sort of rhythm, which used to be, you know, the Memorial Day weekend.
Was the kickoff.
Yeah. So even like that Hobbs and Shaw comes out at the beginning of August.
Right.
That was a classic early to mid-July movie.
Yeah. What's the big July 4th type movie?
Well, Toy Story 4, Please No More, that's coming out this week. And then next week or the week after is the Spider-Man Go Away From Home or something.
Oh, there's a new Spider-Man movie?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
I guess.
Oh, come on. You know this. Stop it. Stop it.
I didn't know it was coming out this summer. I knew there was
That's a lie.
It's
you
not.
Knew it.
I didn't know.
I don't believe
I didn't
know. You. You knew it. You are a Spider-Man aficionado, and I know you are. Don't stop it. Stop with the lies.
I love Spider-Man.
I know you do.
Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay, there's a little story. This is why we go off track so quickly, but there was a time when I went to visit you in L.A. with my ex-girlfriend, and we were driving in your car. You just picked us up. We were going I don't know where.
Yeah.
And you look over the side, and there's a car driving up next to you, and there's a little kid in the back seat, and he looks over at you, and he holds up a Spider-Man lunchbox. And without missing a beat, you look back, you reach down into your back seat and you pulled out an identical Spider-Man lunchbox. And the kid, look on his face, he freaked out. It was like as if you had paid that driver to go by just to impress me and my girlfriend. And you did. It was amazing.
Oh, yes. What a beautiful moment of synchronicity and all about Spider-Man.
So you know what? One of the things I really used to love about summer.
Yes. The other part of the summer movie season.
Yeah. Is going to the drive-ins.
Yes.
That was my thing. I mean, I went almost every weekend as a kid. I would scour the various drive-ins that were playing within a 20 to 30 mile radius and figure out the perfect combination that I knew I could get my parents to take me to.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, we only had one drive-in nearby, and so I went maybe once or twice a summer.
Oh, of course, because you were like Nell living out in the woods.
Yes.
As a shut-in, and you just maybe stumbled upon the drive-in. But for me, it was much different. I loved going, and again, it had to be the right combination of movies
right.
for that sort of perfect drive-in. They can't be too good. The kind of, you know, comedies worked well, or horror movies were perfect
right.
drive-in films.
And when they doubled up the movies, would they do like two horror films and two comedies?
A lot of times it was the same studio. And before okay. the days of the VHS, it would typically be a movie that was out in theaters for a little bit and then, you know, was making its second run.
Right. So,
for instance, Poltergeist, right? That, if it came out at the beginning of the summer, at the end of the summer is when it would hit the drive-ins.
Right.
And it would play with something that was a hit the year before.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so what was great is before the VHS, and especially if you didn't have
a movie
HBO.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's how I ended up seeing Any Which Way You Can 6 times at the drive-in. I'm not making a joke.
That, I think, is really one of the perfect drive-in movies.
Yes. And we've seen it with a perfect drive-in pairing of Stripes, which I also saw at the drive-ins about 6 times. Because any time that was paired with something, the family was in the car. We were like, yes. My dad was a huge Bill Murray fan, and we, as a family, loved Stripes.
Yeah. Well, it is a pretty great movie.
Yes. So today it's a little different because it's sort of a novelty if there's a drive-in in your area. And
right.
they will get the first run movie that opening weekend. And it's sometimes paired with another film from that summer. So you don't necessarily get the perfect combos.
Right.
Though they do tend to try to put, you know, a horror movie with a horror movie and a kids movie with a kids movie.
Yeah. I think they probably have to stay kind of within the rating.
Like you would think that, but that's not always true. I'm not kidding. Well, I think
really?
Because these movies start so late, because, you know, it has
right.
to be dark enough that sometimes they'll put the G movie on first or the PG movie, and then the R movie would be later, like at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right,
you know,
right,
kids
right.
are hopefully sleeping.
In the back of the
Believe
car.
Believe me, if my parents did that and took me to something like that, I would be up.
You know, you would not be sleeping during the R-rated feature.
No, I would not.
Okay, so the other thing that I did during the summer, since drive-ins weren't available, is I spent a lot of my time at the movie theater, and I would watch two films. So it was a little different.
The old watch a movie, sneak into a movie?
Pretty much. I would buy one ticket and kind of spend the day at the theater.
Okay.
The double feature, I would do that then at the theater, and then there was also the video store double feature.
So you'd get a couple movies.
You would get two movies, and you and your friends would pick out these two films, and you watch two movies that night. This got me thinking about double features, and because sometimes, I mean, how often do you watch two movies in a day?
Not as much as I used to, but
right.
sometimes.
But sometimes you're going to do a double feature, and I don't know if you think about your pairings or if you just end up watching two different things. But if you think about your pairings, sometimes you end up with movies that don't go so well together. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
So, like, romance movies, right?
Yes.
Of course, everybody loves When Harry Met Sally because it's a great romance movie and they fall in love, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought this is a great double feature with Blue Valentine.
sort of a romance in part. The end of a romance, I guess.
Exactly. It's the end of a romance. And When Harry Met Sally is the beginning, in a way.
And of course, they're both great movies in their own right, but you just may not think of them as a nice pairing.
Yeah, exactly. If you're looking for like a nice, light, romantic movie to watch with your significant other, those two are not going to jive very well. Those
two movies. No, you may want to watch Blue Valentine first so that you can like feel good later with Harry Met Sally, because Blue Valentine is very depressing.
Well, that's I think that's also an important thing with a double feature is what order you put them in. Like you were talking about, you put Toy Story first and then you put Poltergeist second, or you know, those are different eras, but you put the R-rated movie second. And so I think the order of the pairings is pretty important.
Yeah, it would be like if there was that, you know, movie from several years ago called Center Stage, where this young girl is wants to be a ballet prodigy in New York City and, you know, has to learn the ropes. Well, you could pair that with Suspiria, another ingenue to going to a dance academy to learn the ropes, but it's just a little different.
No, I did just watch Suspiria, but I haven't seen Center Stage. Is it kind of like it's not a serious drama, right? It's kind of a...
Well, it's sort of drama, but it's very popcorn. Okay. You know, my wife likes it a lot.
Okay. So, yeah, I get it. I can see what kind of movie it is.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it features an early performance from Zoe Saldana.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's a side player in it.
Okay.
You knew early on she was going to be a star. All right. Well, I'm gonna guess that you've got some more pairings that you can throw at.
Oh, I've got some more pairings.
I'd like to hear one.
Okay, here's one. Now, this is a movie.
you can't even get it out.
I can't even get it out because this pairing is sort of a joke. I'm just throwing it out as a joke.
Okay.
Because it's a movie that I've only seen once.
All right. Well, I don't think you have to see it 1,000 times.
No, but I've only seen it once, and I don't plan to watch it again, so I think it would be a great double feature with itself.
What? Okay.
Yes, Requiem for a Dream paired with Requiem for a Dream.
I don't even understand what you're talking about.
You just have to sit there and watch this movie twice in a row.
So the first time is punishment, and the second time is absolute punishment. It's a challenge.
It's a challenge. Because I couldn't think. I mean, it was almost too easy to pair a movie with that because it's such an extreme, disturbing, dark movie that it's so easy to put, you know.
I didn't think of that. I had some movies that I could have thought of that were so extreme, but I couldn't think of like something that could even be uplifting to match it with in an inappropriate way.
Right. I mean, there's not really an uplifting movie about drug use.
You're probably right.
But you could probably pair it. You could probably pair it with a movie about achieving the American dream or something.
Right. This would be the antithesis.
And this would be the antithesis. But I just think having to watch Requiem for a Dream twice that would just be, I mean, imagine sitting at the drive-in and you're done with that, watching that.
Well, yeah, because honestly, Requiem for a Dream is not a drive-in movie at all. But if you were to go that road, I can give you one that is a drive-in movie.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to see if you can, I'll lead up to the title, but I'm going to read off the little thing. Okay. So this definitely was a summer film at the time. I saw it in the summer, you know, so this fits. The Ripleys are planning a fun summer cabin getaway, but this being a John Hughes written movie, so things aren't going to be so easy. Throw in some annoying in-laws, crazy subtitled raccoons, a legendary bear, an oversized steak, and you got a party full of shenanigans. Fun for the whole family. It's the great outdoors.
Oh, man, I haven't seen that in a long time.
I saw it a couple years ago because my kids are at the age where they could laugh at that. It wasn't one of my favorites when I first saw that because I think I was getting a little tired of the John Hughes shtick. Mm-hmm. I'd seen it so many times. But I've got a pairing. I've got a pairing for that. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
And I'll give you the title after I give you the intro.
Okay.
All right. Ann and George just want to get away with their son to their cabin for the weekend. Forget those marital troubles and just be a family. But uh-oh, who's that knocking on the door? Things get a little crazy when two wholesome boys from the neighborhood drop by to borrow an egg. Get set for 2 hours of action-packed fun and games from the master of comedy, Michael Haneke, the comedy sensation, Funny Games. They're two cabin movies,
They're two cabin movies. They're about, you know, getting away with your family and...
Working out your issues.
Working out your familial issues.
I thought that would be a perfectly wrong double feature.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I can imagine seeing that at the drive-in.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Well, it would actually, that's a movie that could have played as the horror double feature.
Yeah, and it, and it, and it go great actors.
Oh, I got way more. I got a whole list, buddy.
Okay. Oh, I've got a list too, and it's not
as
just
if, as if you as if this was planned out or something.
It's not just and my that was the only movie where I had as a double feature with itself.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, all right. So we're going to keep this moving along because we got lots of fun pairings. I just can imagine.
Okay. This is a fun pairing about, I guess it's two movies about people that are kind of alone in the world and they're looking for a connection and they fall in love with a prostitute.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with Pretty Woman, I think, is the way to go.
Of course.
And I'm going to follow it up with Leaving Las Vegas.
That's actually pretty genius. It really is the same story.
It's pretty much the same movie, pretty much the same story. And it's just kind of two different treatments of the same story. One is a little more lighthearted, and one is
set in LA,
and one and the other one begins in LA and then sort of takes this trip to Vegas. And I think that, you know, this really gets at the heart of what it is about falling in love with prostitutes in movies. I mean, because you know, it's a trope in movies.
It's just true.
Yeah. So I thought those two together at the drive-in, and it, actually that's more of like a sneak into the other theater one.
Yeah, you know, did you ever see Pretty Woman in the theater?
Yes, I did. I saw it when it came out.
Because, you know, we knew each other then, but yeah, we didn't see that together. I didn't want to see that movie at all. We were sort of forced to see it with my friend Mary Lynn. She wanted to go, and I said, okay. And we go to this theater, and it was completely packed, and it was almost entirely filled with women seeing the movie.
Okay.
And I watched it, and I thought it was pretty good for what it was. It was way better than I was anticipating, and I enjoyed it. But it was towards the end of the movie, and I started hearing this noise, all these sniffling sounds.
Oh.
All this crying going on, and I looked around, and I see all these handkerchiefs out, and these women. And I didn't see anything happening in the movie that warranted crying. I didn't know what people were crying about. And I turned to like make a comment to Mary Lynn, like, can you believe all of these people crying? I turn and she is crying buckets. And I was like, okay, so there's clearly something going on here that I, as a man, am not attuned to.
Was it the last scene? Was it that she rescues him right back?
Is that, yeah, well, he rescues her, right, I guess. No. But I couldn't, like I said.
But the line she says is, and then she rescues him right back.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I was just shocked that people were getting that emotional over the movie. But clearly, the maestro, Gary Marshall, he knew the right buttons to push.
Yeah, my experience seeing this movie was I was in Texas. My grandfather was in the hospital dying.
Oh, my God.
And my father and I had flown to Texas to be with him on his deathbed. And, you know, you can't spend the entire day at the hospital. And so we just left, you know, we had lunch or something, and we said, let's just go to the movies. And we went to the theater, and Pretty Woman was playing, so we saw that.
And did it cheer you up?
And it did, actually.
Yeah, well, let's see, it did its job. Hey, you know, I'm going to segue because I got a perfect pairing when we were talking about medicine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The first is it's a good fish out of water story. Is the Michael J. Fox classic Doc Hollywood.
Oh, yes. Directed by Michael Caton Jones, I believe.
Yeah. Where he, you know, he's going off to L.A. to become a plastic surgeon, and he's driving his fancy car, and then he crashes it in the little cute little backwards town in the South, and basically he has to, like, he's sentenced to become the town doctor for a week or something. And it's basically the same plot as the first Cars movie. I'm pretty sure there could be a lawsuit. Yes. It's exactly the same plot.
It's exactly the same plot.
And then, you know, eventually he discovers that he really loves it there, whatever. So I have a great pairing with that film. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So who said working in a hospital had to be dull? Wipe that frown from your face, young sickly patient. Patch Adams to the rescue. He'll wear a clown nose while he wears you down mentally. Speaking of mental, don't go into that closet, Monica Potter. Who can think of a better way to spend your holiday film-going dollars than with a family-friendly comedy where the main female protagonist is killed by a dangerous psychopath? Brutal murder in the middle of a film got you down? Don't worry, Patch Adams will get that frown turned upside down. Cue uplifting soundtrack music.
Oh, man.
Patch Adams.
Patch Adams is just one of the most offensive movies I've ever seen.
That's exactly how I felt. I did not see it in the theater, had no desire. I had heard so many bad things about it from critics, just like, this is the worst movie, that when it did come on cable, I felt I needed to watch it. And my jaw dropped in the middle of the movie when Monica Potter is murdered by a psychopath.
Yep.
I just couldn't believe that this was a film pitched towards families. I just was shocked.
It almost pitched as a kid's film.
Yes. So I can only imagine what it was like around the holidays, which is when the movie came out. People taking their kids to see a Robin Williams comedy and getting that scene in the middle.
Now, Robin Williams, he's had a couple of pretty bad movies.
Yes. I got, like Jack.
Like Jack, but the one I'm thinking about is Jacob the Liar.
I didn't see that. Isn't that a remake?
Oh, is it?
I thought it was a remake of a German film.
Okay, it very well may be. But that was slightly offensive.
Humor in the concentration camps is always a dicey subject.
It is, yeah. And that was something I actually thought about on Double Features was, the concentration camp comedies. But it doesn't really. I do have a concentration camp movie on my list, though.
Okay, let's go tread lightly on this.
Yeah, we're going to tread very lightly. But I do have Schindler's List on my list here.
Okay, is that supposed to be the second of the pairing, or is that is there a worse pairing to go with Schindler's List?
Oh, there's a worse pairing. Oh, you were thinking Jacob's Liar with Schindler's List? No.
No, I'm just curious as to what goes with Schindler's List.
Well, I think that with Schindler's List, it's really, it's really a Liam Neeson movie above all else. And so I think you need to pair it with Taken 3.
For the Liam. Not even Taken 2, Taken 3.
It's a Liam Neeson double bill, Schindler's List, and Taken 3.
What even happens in Taken 3?
Well, somebody is taken away, and Liam Neeson has to get them back.
Well, the first movie was his daughter, and I even think the second movie was his daughter.
And Taken 3, it's not his daughter.
It's his cat.
It's his.
I don't know. Give me my cat back.
I think it's his ex-wife or something.
Oh, okay. So they got the daughter twice, and now they have to go for Famke Janssen.
Well, no. I think she dies, and then he's on the run trying to.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, like they think that he did it, has to prove his innocence by getting the people who really killed her?
Yeah. So it's like a remake of The Fugitive.
Ooh. I can't believe you've seen it.
But with Oscar Schindler.
Oh, wow. Well, we're going to have to come back. How about if I bring us back to a happy place with a couple of comedies?
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite buddy-buddy movies is Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Jim Carrey. Yeah. It's a classic. I'll watch that like over and over again. I just think it's hilarious. I think it's the perfect film, right?
Really?
So I was thinking. Okay. I do. Oh, I do. Have you not seen it?
Well, I saw it, maybe in the early 90s when it came out.
I know you don't like comedies, but that movie's the best.
I don't remember finding it funny.
Well, okay, maybe.
But I only saw it the one time. Maybe I need to watch it again. Maybe I missed something.
Maybe you'll find the next movie funnier. This may be more your speed, okay? So I was thinking. So speaking of buddy movies, right? Bob and John are just like any two friends. They share their hobbies, like that newfangled invention, the video camcorder. John's a salesman by day, and Bob dabbles in Hollywood. But at night, these cats can swing. It's a group grope, Big Daddy. America's funniest director, Paul Schrader, elevates this buddy flick up to 11. You guessed it, it's the Bob Crane story, autofocus.
With Greg Kinnear, right?
Yes.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
With Willem Dafoe?
I have.
Oh, it's the best.
The best in a good way or the best in a you can't believe Paul Schrader made this movie kind of way?
No. It feels like a Schrader movie, but like it feels like a good Schrader, which okay. Yeah, there's the terrible, like, I can't believe this guy has ever been allowed to make a film Schrader.
Yeah.
And then there's the guy that makes First Reformed, you know?
Right.
No, autofocus is good. And Willem Dafoe plays the greatest, creepiest performance.
Okay.
Wow.
And so, so you consider it a buddy movie?
It's a wrong kind of buddy movie. That's the whole thing. They are pals, and they just spiral out of control. But it's, you know, certainly a movie you could watch with Dumber and Dumber, but it's right. Probably not the right kind of buddy film to pair up with that.
Yeah, and some of these pairings, I started to think about, like, putting them together, actually, it would not be a good, pleasant double feature to watch those two, but it might make you think about the buddy movie in a way you hadn't thought of before.
Well, I think that any of these pairings we're talking about today, you could take the challenge and
right.
watch, except for maybe the Requiem for a Dream challenge. That's a tough one.
I'm
trying to think of these in ways that, you know, technically – you could look at autofocus as a buddy movie in the way that you could look at Funny Games as a cabin
exactly.
summer movie.
Yeah, yeah, they have a common theme. okay, here's another double feature for you.
Hit me up, Big Daddy.
Okay, it's a movie about Los Angeles and racial tensions. It has intertwining stories with different characters. It's Paul Haggis's Crash.
Crap? Oh, no, Crash.
Yes, Crash. I know you love this movie.
I didn't hate it. I will be honest. I didn't hate it. I saw it on Blu-ray, and I remember at the time, people were raving about this movie.
Yes,
people. They were all like, this movie's so great. And it hadn't been nominated for anything yet. Then I saw it and said, well, this movie shouldn't be nominated for anything. It certainly won't because it's not that great. And then it did get nominated, and then it won Best Picture, which instantly elevated it to a horrible movie.
Yes, it did. And now everyone hates it. It's known as being like the worst Best Picture winner ever.
Yeah, which I think may be a little unfair. But at the same time, if it had not been nominated for Best Picture and won, I think people just would have forgotten about the movie. They wouldn't be talking about it in any capacity.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Would have been totally forgotten about, kind of like the film I'm pairing it with.
Ooh.
David Cronenberg's Crash.
I like this. This sort of like pairing, like going with movies with the same title.
Yes.
But boy, you're going to be in for a much different experience with Crash.
Yeah. So Cronenberg's Crash is, you know, of course, a movie about people whose sexual fetish is getting in car accidents.
Yeah. I like that movie, by the way.
I saw it in the theater, too. I like it quite a bit. I like it a lot better than Paul Haggis's Crash. But I think that having to watch these two together would be an uncomfortable evening.
Yeah, I mean, I think just watching the Cronenberg Crash in any setting is probably an uncomfortable evening.
Yeah, it is. I saw it. Was there, when you saw in the theater, were there a lot of people there? Because, man, I saw.
No, I mean, it was a whole controversy. It was rated NC-17,
yeah.
Or they maybe released it unrated. And I think that it was a very weird thing where the Cannes Film Festival gave it sort of an Audacity Award
yeah.
to David Cronenberg. And, you know, I like almost everything Cronenberg's done. So I enjoyed seeing that.
Yeah, I am a Cronenberg fan. But yeah, I saw this movie with a pretty big audience, and there was a lot of reaction from the audience.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was sort of horrified and disgusted sounds.
That's probably how I felt watching Crash, the first one, the Haggis.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I think that you can feel that way about both these movies.
Yes, I like that. I like that. Okay, I got a pairing that I think you'll enjoy.
Okay.
Okay. You know, speaking of like sort of L.A., right?
Yeah.
For a second. La La Land.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Musical. I know a lot of people either really love it, love it, love it, like myself. I know there's a listener of ours, Tony. He just thinks it's garbage. I don't know why, but he doesn't like it. Oh, he's really averse to it. Maybe because he works in L.A. and he thinks it's a bunch of BS or something, which, okay. You know, it's a fantasy.
It is a fantasy. People have complaints about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know.
Yeah, I don't. I guess there are people who think it's garbage. I guess there is a contingent.
I mean, I fell for it, and it really got me. And I kind of actually even, I like the idea of like, you know, I know the whole thing about struggling to make your dreams come true and that sort of exciting, sort of magical, almost like a musical when you're first meeting somebody in a romantic capacity. And then what the film does, I thought was brilliant, is that it comes right back into the second half of the film, the reality of being in a relationship.
Right.
And then it finds a way at the end to give us the magic Hollywood ending.
Yes.
But then still stay, the reality was that it wasn't, but yet it finds a way to use the musical to imagine
that
scenario.
To do sort of the fantasy and the reality, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's way, way more complex than a simple musical.
I think that's absolutely true, yeah. So wait, what are you going to pair it with?
Yeah, see, I've got you built up. Okay, fine. So speaking of musical romance, here's a great pairing with La La Land. Who needs happy musicals when you can watch Pennies from Heaven? Arthur is a sheet music salesman in Depression-era Chicago. His nagging wife, Joan, just doesn't see his passion for the music. She wants a more enterprising man. Sex? Whoa, that's tough talk, mister. Don't you bring that kinky sex talk into this household. What's a poor, sexually frustrated Steve Martin to do? Don't worry, down on your luck, fella. That wholesome school teacher, Bernadette Peters, will help you out of your hang-ups. Just don't get her pregnant. You think abortions in 2019 Georgia are tough? Try 1934 back alley Chicago. Jump forward a little bit, and that now fired school teacher will be hitting the streets, prostitute style. Out of luck and now thrown out of the house, Steve Martin's Arthur has a plan for happiness. He'll take Bernadette Peters away from her new streetwalking life and they'll run away to someplace brighter. Oops, if only that kindly blind woman Steve Martin befriended didn't go and get herself raped and murdered. Someone's got to take the blame and it might as well be Steve. It may be the most depressing musical you've ever seen. Toss in some amazing visuals by the Prince of Darkness, Gordon Willis, and set recreations of paintings by Hopper and Marsh, and you have one of the weirdest 108 minutes of film you've ever seen.
It really is.
It is quite a interesting movie.
It really is. And it's a little bit forgotten about, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Except there's like that small segment of people that, you know, really love it. And I had wanted to see it for years. So I finally was able to catch up on it a couple years back. And it was everything I just mentioned. It's certainly the opposite of the happy-go-lucky La La Land.
Well, since we're on the subject of musicals.
Okay.
So one film I just recently watched for the first time. I think you can probably guess what it is. Singing in the Rain.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes. Just watched it for the first time. It's a movie about Hollywood, about performance. It has this musical number called Make Him Laugh. It, like, can't get much more joyful than that.
It's true.
And I think it's a great double feature with another musical about a young woman who goes to America expecting everything to be just this, like, kind of this beautiful Hollywood type story. And she sings and dances in this movie. And I think you know that I'm going
for... I know what it is.
That's right. Dancer in the Dark.
I was going to do a whole... I'm glad I didn't do the whole write-up on that one. I had that paired with something, believe it or not.
You have it paired with something, too?
Yeah, but I mean, yours works just fine. Mine was paired with a pretty obscure movie. I was going more on the blind aspect, and mine was from the early 80s, was If You Could See What I Hear, which was a happy-go-lucky, inspirational story about real-life blind man Tom Sullivan.
Okay, that's pretty good. That is pretty good.
Bjork, by the way, that movie that you just mentioned, Dancing in the Dark, it is probably the most depressing movie I've ever seen.
Yes, and that's saying a lot for a Lars von Trier movie.
It is absolutely his most depressing film. Now, I really liked that movie.
I like it a lot, yeah.
I thought that Bjork deserved – I thought she deserved the Oscar. Never mind. Yeah. She didn't even get nominated, but I thought she deserved it. She was incredible. It's a film I saw in the theater, and yeah, I've never watched again because I could never go through that experience a second time.
That's exactly how I feel about it. It was a really tough experience, but I really liked it in the way that you like any movie that gets a reaction from you.
It's basically, I felt like it was like Lars von Trier trying to say that the American dream is a fraud.
That's exactly it, yeah. I think that, and that the American dream has sort of been sold to us through musicals in a way.
Yes. I remember having conversations with people at the job that I had at the time who'd also seen it, just talking about the levels of depression that movie heaps on you.
Yeah, it really and it really is. It's like the exact opposite set of emotions to Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, it may be that movie might actually be an appropriate double bill with Requiem for a Dream.
Yes, that
might carry you out in a stretcher after that double bill.
Oh man, yeah, that would just be just way too bleak.
Okay, I don't have any more colorful descriptions of movies.
Oh, but you got some more pairs.
I have pairings. I just don't have any more prepared speeches. one is a movie that you and I saw. Really enjoyed it. I've seen it many times over the years, and love it, is Defending Your Life.
Oh, yes. Albert Brooks, right? Yeah.
Yes, great afterlife comedy.
Did we see that together?
We did.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yes, your sister was visiting us at the time with a guy who wore a mailman outfit, but he was not a mailman.
Oh, yes.
John Garofalo was with us at the time.
Okay,
as well.
Yep, I remember. We went to see Defending Your Life. Yeah, it's a great great little afterlife movie.
Yeah, very very imaginative of what it might be like to be sort of in the way station between Earth and the next life. What can we pair that with? I thought of one. You know, speaking of our friend Robin Williams. What Dreams May Come.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Possibly the most colorful, sad, depressing afterlife movie ever made.
It really is. It really is. But somehow people kind of think it's a feel-good movie.
They do? No. What?
That was
horrible. And now it's even worse because then it's really sad is that Robin Williams took his own life years later.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with the story of the movie, but I mean, basically what Robin Williams is hoping to die.
Yes.
After his car is in a crash because his wife had killed herself like 6 months before or something.
Right.
So he's trying to decide in this weird afterlife with Cuba Gooding Jr. as a spirit animal or something.
Right. Yes. As sort of his angel guide.
Yes.
But the afterlife is sort of so incredibly beautiful and colorful and well art designed that it almost makes it not as depressing.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it in the theater, but man, it's definitely about as 180 degrees from the fun of defending your life as possible.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Have you seen this Japanese movie called Afterlife?
I have not. Is this on your list?
No, but it just occurred to me.
Oh, okay.
That it's sort of a defending your life kind of type movie.
No.
That's really worth seeing. It's a way station. You know, people die and they go to this way station. And what happens there is they're making movies and they talk to you about your most treasured memory. And then they make a movie of that. And you live eternity in that little short film.
Oh, that sounds, is that available somewhere? Because I kind of want to watch that.
Yeah, it's really good. It's from 1998. And I don't know if it's available. I saw it years and years ago.
Hmm. Oh, so you've gotten off topic. What's your next pair?
Let's see. What else do I have here? Oh, 13 Going on 30.
Okay, that's totally a drive-in movie.
That is totally a drive-in movie. It's like Big, right? You know, the girl is suddenly 30. But she's really 13. And I thought this would be a good double feature with the movie 13.
About the horrors of what it's really like to be.
About the horrors of what it's really like being a 13-year-old and drugs and sex and all the horrible things that can come with being a teenager and the bleak reality of that opposed to this sort of lighthearted fantasy about a teenager experiencing the adult world.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, it's not a good pairing, but it's a good pairing.
Yeah, I think there's something interesting there.
Let's see here. Okay, I got this one I think you'll enjoy. The Money Pit is one of your favorite comedies.
Yep, it is.
You know, it's all sort of a home fixer-upper, marital problems, and well, they weren't even married, right? They were boyfriend and girlfriend,
yeah.
Right? Okay, so I didn't write it. I'll do want to see if I can do my best write-up on this next one. So we'll pair it with, you know, she's got her new country home that she just wants to fix up and make her own. He is a struggling artist who's got writer's block. Throw in a little Mother Nature and some biblical allegories, and you've got that fun-loving comedy, Mother.
As soon as you said The Money Pit, I knew.
Yes, Aronofsky again. And it is a brilliant double feature with The Money Pit.
It's a great double feature, yeah. Oh, that's...
I think when you first suggested doing this episode, that's the first pairing that came into my head.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was so excited about it that I forgot to write a write-up, but... Oh, I love that. Oh, I got a couple more good ones. Don't worry, I got some other juicy tidbits.
Okay, yeah, my list just keeps going. How about Happiness and Little Miss Sunshine?
You know what? That's a lot of both wacky, dysfunctional families. But of course, one is a little bit more extreme than the other.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Miss Sunshine fan, by the way. Is that wrong to say? Am I going to get shot?
I don't know.
I didn't like it.
I saw it once. I thought it was enjoyable enough. I never needed to see it again.
I know. What does it say about me that I've seen Little Miss Sunshine once, but I've seen Happiness three times?
Yeah, but Happiness... yeah. Okay. I don't know what that says, but it's...
I don't know. Oh, dear. I got another inappropriate double call.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Some Like It Hot.
Okay.
Fun cross-dressing comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Beloved is one of the great comedies.
Uh-oh.
Okay. You ready for this?
Yep.
That's terrible, can't say.
You can't.
Okay. All right, I'm calming down.
Get it together. You can do this.
Boys Don't Cry.
Oh, that's perfect. I was looking for a pair with Boys Don't Cry, but that's really it. Oh, wow.
I think okay. I could have gone Tootsie. That would have been probably easier, but
no, I think this is better. I think this I think Some Like It Odd is way better, actually. Because Tootsie still has some seriousness to it, whereas Some Like It Hot is just silly.
Oh, yeah, you really got me thinking with this challenge. For you listeners, if you've got any great incorrect double bills, feel free to send them along.
Just plain wrong double features.
Yeah.
Like Dirty Dancing and Black Swan.
Another, geez, Aronofsky, basically, he is, can be paired up in the, on the bad side of any film.
Yes.
So, like, you know, you'd take, like, the Ten Commandments and you'd pair it with his version of Noah or whatever.
Right.
What was that one called?
That was called Noah. I think it was called Noah.
I didn't, that's the one Aronofsky movie I haven't seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you've got to see it.
I guess I'm not a completionist.
You have got to see it.
Is it ridiculous?
It's unbelievable. Your jaw will be on the ground throughout this movie.
What can we pair with The Wrestler?
You know,
what would be like Rocky and The Wrestler?
Rocky,
I still feel like it's, nah.
Yeah, that's almost right, though.
How about like The Water Boy?
That, I think, might be the way to... And there's another football one that Adam Sandler did, right? Didn't he do a remake of Burt Reynolds?
The Water Boy, no. Oh, yeah, he did The Longest Yard.
He did The Longest Yard, yeah.
I refuse to see that because I am a huge original Longest Yard fan.
I have not seen... I've seen the original. I have not seen the remake. Not out of any...
It's more like I guess can't.
Yeah.
So you got any other double bills?
Oh,
a couple more.
I'll throw out a couple more. WALL-E, which is a, you know, post-apocalyptic comedy about people who... have sort
eat
of
too much,
who don't do much and have kind of sealed themselves away from the destruction of the world. And I thought that would be a good double feature with THX 1138. Which,
oh, I think I'd rather watch Requiem for a Dream. Now my wife will slap me. She loves that movie, but I just never could get into it.
Into THX 1138?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of stale.
Well, it's cold. It's a really...
It's very cold.
It's a very cold movie. There's really no... very little life or passion to it until the very end. Anyway, that was one of my parents. Let's see if I have anything else. A little David Fincher Film Fest, Alien 3 and The Social Network.
You're not a Fincher guy, I believe.
Right, but you take somebody's best film and their worst film and put them together and... You know.
I would absolutely agree. There is just, I mean, you know what? Some movies, they're not received well, even by yourself when you first see them. And
right.
Then 15 years later, you go and reevaluate and say, hey, that was actually not too bad. No, Alien 3 is still and always will be terrible.
Yes. And I actually tried recently in the last year or so, I watched the director's cut.
Okay.
Or the long cut or whatever cut it is, the special cut. It's worse. Because there's more of it.
We should do an episode on director's cuts where sometimes the director F's up the movie with their cut.
Yeah, I would say that is the case with Alien. Well, I had this impression of Alien 3 that had been sort of destroyed by the studio and taken away from the director. And no, the movie was just always terrible.
Wow. So Goodfellas.
Oh.
It's one of the...
Yeah.
Classics of cinema, Martin Scorsese, kind of the gold standard of your mafia movies.
Yep.
I'm going to pair that with... You're laughing. You don't even know what I'm going to pair it with. What do you think I'm going to pair it with?
Oh, I'm thinking... I was thinking like Meet the Fockers or something.
No, that's too obvious, though. I guess that could have gone that with because Goodfellas is actually kind of funny, and I could actually see people kind of pairing that with that. No,
that's
no.
That's true.
I am going to show, in order to show you the genius of Martin Scorsese and why this movie is so great, you've got to pair it with the worst imitation possible, which is Kevin Connolly's Gotti.
Oh,
with
okay.
John Travolta,
yes,
hoping for a comeback that just never will be, and this movie is so embarrassingly bad. Everything you've heard about it cannot prepare you for just how awful it is.
Really? I have not seen it.
You've got to watch it. It's like, think on Netflix. You've got to see it because it is so bad, because you could see him trying to capture some form of Scorsese magic by having his camera move around and like throw, big rock songs on it and try to give it a feel. And it just falls so flat and wooden. And it's a story that doesn't really have the right point of view. And it's so bad.
Okay. And it's Travolta as John Gotti?
Yeah. And it's not that he's terrible in it. It's just he finds himself in a movie that I think he wished he could get out of.
Understand. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
It's so poorly shot. The lighting is terrible. Everything you've ever heard me complain about with digital cinematography is right on display. Sometimes it's hard to know, well, what does a director do? And you have to watch really bad movies sometimes to see what a bad director does that gets in the way of the movie. And clearly, this guy should never make another movie.
Yeah, I had a sort of similar combo, which is sort of the difference between good direction and bad direction, which was Batman Begins paired with Batman and Robin.
Oh, that's almost too easy, though. You know,
it is. Yeah, everybody hates on Batman. I'm getting down to the bottom of my barrel here.
I got to tell you, though, man, I saw Batman and Robin, and I saw it in the theater because a friend of mine had won free tickets to in Boston to the night before an open show or something.
Right.
And our jaws were just like down on the floor wondering like who could have made – it was so bad.
It's so ill-conceived on every level.
Oh, the Mr. Freeze stuff is just ridiculous. Yeah, it's so bad.
It's a really terrible movie.
And, you know, George Clooney, I mean, I think what I like about George Clooney is that he takes a lot of responsibility for the movie being terrible, but I don't think he is that bad in it.
No, he's actually a decent Batman.
Yeah, it's just that the movie he's surrounded with is the worst.
Yeah, and I remember seeing an interview with Clooney where he basically said he never wanted to do another movie like that, and he met with his accountant after doing the Batman movie, and his accountant said, you never need to work again. And so Clooney said, great, I'm just going to do the movies I want to do.
Yeah, and his career has been better for it far as at least the movies go. I don't even know what to say to that. I mean, I can't laugh. That this Batman and Robin isn't even a funny joke. It's just sad. and it's true. If you want to see, I know you're not the biggest Nolan fan, but that guy resurrected the Batman franchise. Yes. And if it wasn't for him making it okay to watch superhero movies again, you probably would not have this insanity that is Marvel today.
That's probably true. Yeah. And I do like Batman Begins. Let's see. I got one more real easy
one. And then
one.
I have one more. That'll be perfect.
Okay. Here it is. It's really easy. I'm almost embarrassed it's so easy. It's probably been a double feature. Lawrence of Arabia.
Yep.
And you can guess what I'm pairing it with.
I can't.
You can't? Well, it's
I don't know. What it's a long movie. It's already two movies in one.
It's already two movies in one. But I think it's got to be paired with Ishtar.
Because they're both they have moments in the desert?
They're both about white people going to the Middle East.
Okay. Yes. There you go. There's the connection.
That's the connection I was going for. I almost went down a whole white savior rabbit hole on this coming up with this list, but
that's okay, because this is just one episode. We have plenty of time to explore the white savior debacle in movies. We have a whole history of films.
We have a whole history of films, but the one that I was really trying to, in fact, I'm going to throw this out there, is The Blind Side.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and I'm going to pair that with Avatar.
You got to have to explain where you're going with that one.
Okay, well, Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar.
Not the airbender.
Not the airbender. James Cameron's Avatar is about a white guy who goes and joins some natives on a planet and is better at being one of them than they are at being themselves.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. And this time he's like the white savior of blue people.
He's the white savior of blue people, but it's absolutely, he comes, like, they can't do anything on their own until this guy who literally dresses up in a costume to look like that.
This is true. You know, how did that movie ever become the biggest film of all time? It still amazes
and
me.
And how are there going to be 8 more sequels about white saviors?
I don't know. I'd be, you know what? I'd be really scared if I was the film studio, because they got a lot of money riding on this and wondering if people are still going to be interested this many years later.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's it's a real gamble. I think,
yeah, Cameron's done it before, but
it's true. Again. He has bucked the trends before, and I mean, Titanic people thought was going to be a disaster.
I know. Well, the Titanic was a disaster, but the movie,
the movie
was not.
But people thought the movie was going to be a disaster, and there were all these problems during shooting, and somehow it worked out.
Okay, so here's my last one.
Yeah,
it's not that good. So maybe a couple of chuckles, but if you've heard our last episode, the opening music that I used was from, because it's sort of another summer film, was from the Cannonball Run.
Oh yes. Oh man, yeah. I loved that as a kid. I loved that movie too.
I loved it.
Probably saw it 3 or 4 times in the theater.
Yeah, I did. I saw it as. It was it already been playing for a few weeks, and I saw it when I went to see a sneak preview with my dad, and it was paired with a probably inappropriate George Hamilton classic Zorro the Gay Blade.
Oh yes.
which I got some chuckles out of, but I really enjoyed the Cannonball Run. So one of the film that I thought I would pair it with, the inappropriate second feature, would be Cannonball Run 2, which was the worst sequel I have ever seen in my life. My friend Robert and I couldn't wait to see the Cannonball Run 2. Oh. Saw it opening day, and we were shocked at what a piece of shit it was.
Yeah, it just sucks. It has none of the charm of the first one.
It's just like they were like, people want a sequel, we'll make one, but nobody felt like really making a sequel. It is terrible. There's not a single laugh in the movie.
Yeah. Talk about people showing up for a paycheck.
It's the ultimate paycheck film.
Yeah.
Yep. So Cannonball Run paired with Cannonball Run 2.
Oh, man.
All right. That's it. That's my whole list. I didn't even think we were going to get through all of them, but we did.
I've got a few more, but they're just not worth mentioning, so.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe it's a parting thing. You got to give me one more, and I'll tell you honestly whether it was worth it.
I got a couple.
Come on. Come on.
Okay. Well, I know that you haven't seen this film, so.
That's okay.
Top Gun and Good Kill.
I don't even know what Good Kill is.
So Good Kill is written and directed.
Oh, you were just telling me about this.
I was just telling you about it. Written and directed by Andrew Niccol, who did The Truman Show.
Right. And Gattaca.
And Gattaca, yeah, he's an interesting writer-director. Sometimes has some interesting films. Sometimes does something like About Time. Did you see that one?
I did. It wasn't that bad.
It's not terrible. Anyhow.
Shot by Roger Deakins, I'll have you know.
That's true. Yeah. So this movie, Good Kill, Ethan Hawke is a drone pilot in Nevada, and he gets up every morning and goes and flies drones over Afghanistan. And it's a really a movie, it's almost a bottle movie. It's like a guy in a room flying a drone. And it's really about the moral complications that come with taking life. Yeah, it really gets into like the toll, the moral toll and emotional toll on soldiers of having to kill people.
Now, where is this available?
It's on Netflix.
It is?
Yes, it's available on Netflix.
I just want, because, you know, you talking it up, and now I would, like, the struggle is, can I actually go and find this with ease? So,
yes.
You know, I'm not opposed to watching it. I just need to know if I can see it.
You can absolutely see it. It's on Netflix. And it's, you know, it's the exact opposite of kind of the rah-rah, go America, Top Gun kind of militaristic view of the world.
Yes. And it's funny, I just rewatched Top Gun. I have not seen that movie a lot, but I watched it with my oldest about a month and a half ago, and we enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, I actually rewatched it about 6 months ago because we were talking about practical effects.
I rewatched it because we've been talking about a Scott versus Scott episode, and I got to brush up on my Tony, and you need to brush up on your Ridley.
I am brushing up on my. I guess I'm going to have to watch the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven.
I want to. Where can I see that?
I don't know.
That's why we haven't had the episode yet. I can't get certain films watched that I want to watch.
But I do want to see the director's cut of that because it's supposed to be a lot better.
Yeah, supposed to. But see, this is, again, director's cuts. We don't know. Sometimes you said, oh, the director's cut, and then you find out it's a bag of crap. And I'm looking at you, Donnie Darko. They took a perfectly good movie and actually ruined it.
And then ruined it.
And realized that Richard Kelly is the bad director we thought he was.
Yes. And somehow
his director's cut's terrible.
And he had somehow been saved by the studio.
Yeah. So... All right. Well, hey, look at kids. This has been a fun kickoff to the summer. Hope you don't take our advice and watch these pairings.
Or don't.
I don't know. It's a good idea. It's a fun game.
If you do, let us know how it works out for you. But
yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, a lot of these pairings on their own, the movies are good movies.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You just don't necessarily want to watch them next to each other.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I don't know if I ever have to watch Requiem for a Dream again. But
no, you need to watch it twice in a row.
Yeah, I was not a big fan of that movie. I got to be honest. It's a good quality movie. It's just, oof.
It's just brutal. It's just, yeah.
I got to go take a shower now. I'm just kidding. All right. Well, hey, everyone. Hope you've enjoyed the program. And don't forget, we are on line at www.stuffweveseen.com and Instagram at stuffweveseenpodcast.com. And we've got a Twitter. That one, I don't know. It's stuffwe, like underscore V or something.
Yes.
And then, you know, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, all those things. Find us,
listen, and give us some feedback.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing too, right? I know this sounds like pandering for applause kind of thing, but, you know, if you could take a moment on Apple and give us a rating and maybe a review, those things help in that the more we get, Apple will kind of push us into categories so that people can find us because people, you know, we're like a needle in the haystack. And, you know, the only way people are going to know about us is if you, the audience, share and tell people about us.
So get to it, listeners.
Yeah, come on. Don't let us down.
All right.
Well, goodbye, everybody. And I don't know when our next episode will be. It might be a few weeks or it might just be next week. I don't know. So if you haven't don't hear from us a while, we'll be back.
We will definitely be back.
Yeah, we got a summer of movies to watch.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.